AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hello, I'm Jim Cornell, and this is the WalkingPost.com podcast. WalkingPost.com is the news website dedicated to walking, with all the latest on trails, gear, vacations, festivals, and more. This podcast, number 15, is going out on June the 6th. Every month, the US and the rest of the world agree once on the format of day and month, because it's 6-6. People seem to like the celebrations thing that I do, so here we go. June the 6th is YMCA Day, it's D-Day Invasion Anniversary Day, it's Donut Day, and it's also Eyewear Day, and it's Russian Language Day. There are lots more. For birthdays, one of the sites that I checked had so many people on it that I wondered what was going on, and more than half of them were YouTubers or TikTokers, not exactly famous. But I did find a few. There was Bjorn Borg, although of course his name isn't said that way in Sweden, the composer Aram Khachaturian, and Alexander Pushkin. Three of my favourite musicians were born on this day too, although most people haven't heard of any of them. Bass player Tony Levin, Tangerine Dream's Edgar Froese, and singer Richard Sinclair. It's been more of the same with the weather, varying between rain and rain so heavy you can't see. So, another weekend of neither walking nor filming. I did a bit of video editing though, and I have to admit that while I was sitting doing nothing, I got an extra camera, although it was only £20 and it's one that clips onto your backpack or your clothes. I definitely wish that I'd had some of these tiny gadgets for some of the trips that I've made and hikes I've done over the years. I'd planned to get the videos that my son and I are working on out by the end of June. Fortunately, I didn't say a year, because if the weather stays this way, it'll be June 2026. Last week, we had a couple of really interesting conversations, one about walking holidays and travel insurance, and the other about the coast-to-coast passport, which you shouldn't use to get back into the UK. I very nearly once used my son's Lego passport at Frankfurt Airport. Not recommended. Having said that, the Lego person face looks much better than either of my passport photos. Actually, one of my passports has expired, so I guess I need yet another terrible photo to show just how much I've aged. This week on the podcast, we have a conversation about the Moray Walking and Outdoor Festival with Diane Smith, and we talk about another festival, the Castlebar International 4 Days Walks, with Rowena Gillespie. Of course, before that, we take a quick look at some of the headlines from this week's articles over on WalkingPost.com. If you do have news, guest ideas or comments, please do get in touch via WalkingPost.com, or you can just email me at jim@walkingpost.com. So, it's time for that brief look at some of the headlines of the news articles on WalkingPost.com this past week, and there were quite a lot of them. In Ireland, the Great Sugarloaf Restoration Project opened, and a new Wicklow Trails app has been launched. In the Banff National Park in Alberta, Canada, one of the trails has banned off-trail walking to protect a rare bird. Hopefully people pay attention. I know when we were walking in the Galloway Forest during that 35-day rainless streak, there were no fire signs everywhere, and in the space of 200 yards we saw two different families with fires, and one of them was right underneath a tree canopy, maybe 10 feet away from a danger no fires sign. Moving along. A new 4.5-kilometre audio trail in St Andrews, Scotland, takes you around the town and along the coast, explaining the Earth's history, where every metre corresponds to a million years. Tourism Seychelles is promoting the new Mont Blanc trail, and it looks incredible. Canada celebrated International Trails Day, and Transport for London has launched three new walking maps. One of them I absolutely love, it's the underground map, but it tells you the distance and time it takes to walk from one tube station to the next. For me, it does look a little bit cluttered and confusing, but when I lived near London and went in every day, I often used to walk to a different station, often so that I didn't have to change lines. Amazing how close some of them are. So the idea is that if you look on the map and see a Northern Line station that gets you where you want to be quicker, you can figure out how long it will take to walk there, and it's a great idea. Doesn't mention the stations with all those long corridors that take 15 minutes to walk along, but I still like it a lot. Speaking of great ideas, funding has been received to deliver a cross-border walking program between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. Some stunning scenery along that border and getting involvement from counties on both sides is a win-win. Clothing brand The North Face has been hit by a cyber attack. Icebug has announced its 2026 summer shoe collection. And a bee trail has been launched in Knutsford in Cheshire. The press release was full of dad jokes related to bees that even I wouldn't use. Anyway, you can read all of those articles and more at walkingpost.com. Okay, let's move on to this week's conversations. First up this week, we're talking about a four-day walking festival in Ireland that's a little bit different. If you're a long-time listener to the podcast, first of all, thank you. And second, you might remember an episode we did with an interview with the IML Walking Association, which coordinates four-day events around the world. One of those walks is the oldest walking event in Ireland, the Castlebar International 4 Days Walks. To tell us about the event is Rowena Gillespie, who is the director of the walks. Before we actually talk about the walking event itself, I wonder if you could kind of give me a bit of a location as to where all this takes place.
So we are in Castlebar. It's a small town in the west of Ireland. So I suppose we'd be an hour from Galway City, an hour from Sligo. We do have a small airport, 30 minutes from us, Knock Airport, which was it's a good story if you ever want to look that up, how that came about by our Monsignor Horan.
All right. And it's close to there's a national park there, just
yes,
not that far away.
We have Ballycroy National Park. Yeah, it's a fantastic amenity here. So it's only recently become a national park. So we've worked alongside with them as well, because there's some lovely walks and routes around there also. So it's fantastic. And this walk started, would you believe, in 1967. This is the oldest walking festival in Ireland. So we're coming up into our 60th year in 2 years' time. So it's a big event, so it is.
You mentioned that it's the oldest festival.
Yes.
Why was it started in the first place?
Okay, so this has actually got a very good story. So there's a town close to us called Westport. A lot of people that come to West Ireland would hear of it because it's a tourist town. But there was a man who worked, and his name was Tommy Brennan. He worked in the post office in Westport, and he also had a travel agency. And through his travel agency, he came across this walking festival in Nijmegen in the Netherlands. And it's now in its 107th year as it happens. And he thought this would be a great concept, a 4 day walking festival. Good for your health, it's good for your mind, all, you know, way ahead of its time. And he put it to the locals to see what could we do, and they refused it. So he came to the Chamber of Commerce in Castlebar to Michael Joe Egan and presented him with this idea. And of course, they thought it was fantastic, but they also came up with the Castlebar International 4 Day Walks and also the Castlebar International Song Contest. And the walks are still running now. The Song Contest, I can't remember what year that finished up in, but that's also a good story. So it is for again. So that's how it came about. And the local Ramble Club ran with the idea, and it's been going ever since. And obviously it was based on, now it's nothing like what Nijmegen is. They get something like 45,000 walkers each year, so they do. But that was based on a military march. And over the years, they let civilians join it. So Castlebar ran with the same sort of idea. So we do a 10-kilometre walk, a 20-kilometre walk, and a cross-country ramble. each day for the 4 days. So people can partake in whichever suits their abilities or their needs. So it's lovely.
All right.
Different routes every day. So yeah, you know, 4 different 10 kilometers, 4 different 20 kilometers, and 4 different rambles.
Has it pretty much stayed the same kind of format every year?
The format has stayed the same. The walks would have changed over the years because, like, I suppose talking back in 1967, there was no things as cars going places or buses. We walked to everywhere. So if you were going to walk in the hills, you had to walk the road to get to the hills. But then them roads weren't busy. So it made it easy. So obviously health and safety and the amount of cars around the roads now. We bus most of our walkers to the rambles, to locations like down in, as I said, in the National Park. We use that area, and we down in, I told you about Achill Island, down that area, we use some of the looped trails that we would use along the way, because obviously we're trying to worry about sustainability, that we're not destroying the land also. So,
do you change the walks around every year?
As director of the walks 3 years ago, so this is, I'm in my third year, so all very new and exciting for me. So I added 2 new road walks for the 20 kilometers, and this year then we've added a new ramble. So trying to change them up, like they're generally the same type of routes, the same sort of areas, but to add a bit of excitement to them or a bit of difference to them. But the west of Ireland, you could get a sunny day, you could get a wet day, you could get a snowy day, all in the one day. So it looks different every time. I tell everyone to bring wet gear and sun cream.
Yeah, that's right. How many people do you usually get at the event?
So obviously COVID had a massive impact on us all, as it did, and then obviously the Ukrainian war had a massive impact on accommodation. So last year and the year previously, we had just under the 400, but previous to that, there would have been up on 1,500, 2,000, you know, which is fantastic for such a small little town. But we're working on building that up again. We would get a lot of international walkers because we are associated with the International Marching League, which was established in, I'm going to tell you, 1987. And Castlebar is actually one of the founding members of it. So we have lots of walks in different countries, and we have an International Marching League little passport. So you can get stamps from different countries. So you can receive your European medals and your global walkers and all that, you know, type thing. So it's really, it's quite good. So if people want to get some of them stamped, they have to come to us. So it's great. We'll have them from up to 20, 22 countries each year, which is fantastic, as far as, you know, New Zealand, Australia, Japan, yeah, all of Europe, the UK. It's fantastic, yeah. Canada, mm-hmm. America, yeah, we have them all.
Where do they all stay?
Yeah, over the years, a lot of host houses or people would stay there, you know, local people would put up stuff as B&Bs. We have the few hotels here, B&Bs, you know, host houses and the like. So they manage, so they do. We manage to get them all in.
No, that's good. What's happening in 2025 then?
Our walks are always on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They're generally the last week in June or the first week in July. But on the Wednesday, we have what we call our opening flag parade. So we have flags from every country that come and join us. And we would march up through the town, and we have a bit of an open ceremony, some music playing and stuff like that. And we come back then to our HQ and have a briefing, you know, on safety, so that everyone knows what to expect, you know, out walking. And then we have literally 4 days of fun and, as we say here, crack. So we walk in the day and we'll socialise in the evening.
Do you have to be a member of that marching league to
no,
join
absolutely,
in? No,
absolutely. Anyone can come along. You can come along to any of the walking festivals in other countries. But if you want to get your little stamps and get medals and extra awards, you know, you can. But you don't have to sign up to anything. You just show up. You can buy your little passport book. It's just, I have it here. Mine looks very dirty, but I can show it to you there. So you get little awards like that, and each country then will give you a stamp from their own walking festival to say that you've done completed the walk in that country.
There's no themes or anything. No,
we don't have a theme, so we don't. Just it's walking for fun. It's not competitive. We know it's good for us. It's good for our health, but it's good for our mental health, and that's obviously a big thing nowadays. So come out, meet new people. From different countries, different walks of life. You could be standing talking with anyone. You never know. Sitting on the hills in the west of Mayo, sitting with some Germans or some Dutch, or who knows?
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's a lot of people would know something about the area and be able to talk as you walk anyway.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we would, as this year we've the National Park, so we've some of them come along, and this year they're going to come along, and if they want to talk about the sustainability, this, you know, the bogland, you know, how important it all is, you know, that's, we're doing that as well. So you can get some education if you want, or if you don't want, you can just chat with anyone.
Right. And what's the ramble? How is that different from the other walks?
It's just cross country. It's not mountains in Scotland or anything like that. It's the hills of the West of Mayo, beautiful scenery, countryside, boggy land. You know, as we say, like, you need walking boots. All terrain runners, they were never tested in the bogs in the West of Ireland. You could easily lose, you could lose a boot, never mind a trail shoe. But just, again, it's just out in countryside, hills, mountains, bogs, wet, dry, you know, a bit of everything. That's a led group, so you don't have to go off that by yourself. You know, you don't have to follow anything. There's a leader, we have leaders, and we have a sweeper, so we don't lose anyone in the bogland.
Is there a cost to go on the walk?
So our 10-kilometre road walk is a tenner per day. Our 20-kilometre is €12, and our ramble then is 18, again, because of buses and costs of that type of things. And they're all per day, so you can chop and change to go between what you want. If people, you know, want to, you know, vary it up, road to bog. If they get stuck in the bog, they might want to go back.
And how do people book? It's just through the website?
It's through our website, or you'll get it on our Facebook or Instagram page. It's all the usual links are all there along the way, the bios and that. And we've closed the date this year is the 29th of June. So there's still plenty of time for people to register. We love to see you. We love to welcome new faces, always.
And how do people get there? Is it just flying into?
You can fly into Dublin, depending on Dublin, Shannon or Knock are the places you can fly into. Dublin, you would be, which obviously is the main airport in the country, and you can get buses or trains to Castlebar. Shannon, I actually not sure. I'm sure you can get the buses from Shannon Airport, or if you can fly directly into Knock, that's only 30 minutes from Castlebar, so you get buses to here as well. It is more remote coming into Ireland, you know, and transport, but it has improved, thankfully.
It's a beautiful area. What are some of your favourite places to walk in that area?
I have to say, I do like down by the National Park. We went through the Newport side, but then we do a lovely walk. It's called Slí Gronuail. So Grace O'Malley, she was a pirate queen, and there's a beautiful walk down that area. And we add a little bit onto it to make it a bit longer. The scenery is just something else, so it is, yeah. Achill Island has its own little microclimate, so you will always have fairly decent weather down there, and the scenery is just breathtaking. I actually can't pick a favourite. But they all offer something different. So some you'll get sea views, some you'll get just bog, forest, or just looking across towards Clew Bay and stuff. That is just unbelievable. We generally have put up a few stories on our Facebook and Instagram, so you'll see when we're recce some of the routes. So you'll see what we have to offer. We try to show both the good days and the bad days. You can see what it's like from both angles.
Right. Well, and then there's also the coast as well, which is beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Like, and so some of our road walks, we use what's called greenways that were set up on old train track lines. So they're fantastic. So they will come with one of them because that's quite along the coastal area. So it's actually beautiful. So it is.
Do people that from that area also go to the international walks as well?
Not as many as I suppose used to. Again, like I suppose COVID put a huge damper on how people socialise. But we would go ourselves down on a lot of walks. We were in, I've done Nijmegen myself, which is a fairly intense walk, or a march as they call it. I've been to Blankenberg in Belgium. I have been, whereas at Brno in the Czech Republic, there's some beautiful, just beautiful walks. So there is. And again, it doesn't matter where you come from, somebody will sit and have the crack with you, have a pint, get to know people, get to know about them, get to know about their country, their walks. It's lovely. So it is. And a great social side of it also, you know, as well as enjoying nice walks in different countries, you know, and along here with us. We want as many to keep coming back to us in the West of Ireland. So we like to have everyone involved, get the community involved also.
I've done some walking in Ireland, but obviously nowhere near enough. Some of the scenery is just incredible. Dare I add yet another place to my bucket list? All right, next, do you know where Moray is? If you said Scotland, you'd be right. It goes from the North Sea coast down into the Cairngorms National Park. And if you've not been there, start planning. The coastline is amazing, and so is the interior. A drive from Aberdeen to Inverness, or vice versa, along the coast through Moray should be on everyone's list. And of course, it has its own walking festival, which could easily last about 2 months.
the Moray Walking and Outdoor Festival takes place from June the 13th to the 23rd. And to give us all the details from the festival is Diane Smith.
Okay, so to get things started before we talk about the festival itself, could you tell us a bit about Moray?
Yeah, sure. Moray has a little bit of everything, I think. We have an award-winning coastline with amazing wildlife and historical coastal villages dotted along the coast. We've got dramatic moorland, and then we've got the hills to the south, which are kind of at the bottom of the Cairngorm Mountains or lead up into the Cairngorm Mountains. We've got two very well-known rivers, the Spey, which people will know because it's the main water into the main whisky distilleries in the area, and we've got the Findhorn, which I'm told's got the best white water rafting in Scotland and incredible scenery. Moray's also one of the driest places in the UK. It's not often brilliantly warm, but we don't that often get the wet weather. If it's raining, it normally comes during the night time, so we don't really see it. Moray has a great amount of history from the Picts to the real Macbeth. It's also got very exciting modern kind of arts culture here too, with arts and dance festivals. Because of its incredible light and dramatic scenery, we've got painters and photographers. But I suppose for us during midsummer, it's very special because it doesn't get dark here until 11 o'clock at night. So there's hours and hours of being outside and enjoying Moray.
And then you've got things like, well, Colin is there. So you've got the culinary aspect of Colin, and you've got things like the, you know, Bowfiddle Rock, beautiful coastline for sure.
Yeah, I think some of the, is it Peaky Blinders was using a lot of the coastal villages for one of their series because it looks very much as it did when in their heights when they were fishing villages and catching all the herring for down in London.
And you also mentioned the cool aspect of things. I'm just right now in the middle of writing an article about something called coolcations, which is people are getting to the point where with climate change, instead of 32, 33, it's 40 to 45. And they're looking for cooler climates to go and visit. So I think that up here in Scotland, it's maybe it's not a good thing, climate change, but certainly for tourists.
Yeah, and for sure. I mean, there are days where you can be on our beaches and you're literally maybe only a handful of people on the beach and it'll be 21, 22 degrees and you could be abroad. But likewise, it could also be 15 degrees and blowing a hoolie, but it's still stunning.
Yeah, that's right.
We're lucky as well because along the coastline, and it's not really until you get a wee bit much further south, we don't have that much midges as well. So that's a bigger bonus, you know, from being on the west coast, is you don't have to worry too much about the midges.
Speaking about the walking festival, could you give me a bit of the history of that, when it started and how it's changed over the years?
Yeah, it's been running for 12, 13 years, and it very much began as a 3-day event, just about walking really. But over the last 10 years for sure, we've started to include different events to encourage a wider group of people to explore Moray. So we have a range of walks which have a hook or an interest, whether it's heritage, nature, or a cultural aspect to it. We try to make sure that we have walks for all abilities as well. So there's maybe walks which are only just a mile or 2 miles, but we also have like big day challenging walks as well. And we try to do walks which are fun. So we might have a poetry walk or a forest bathing walk or foraging. So again, just having things which are a wee bit different just to get people outside and outdoors. Unlike other walking festivals, we're not run by a local authority or a national park. We're a small group of volunteers and we get our events from numerous walking providers who range from community organisations to a local expert to large estates. So everybody comes under our Walking Outdoor Festival umbrella, but they're all live locally and they're all eager to demonstrate how and why Moray is so special. And I suppose that's how we're different from other walking festivals.
And I guess one of the good things about that is the diversity, because there's rivers, hills, waterfalls, beaches. There's so much there.
Yeah, and it just seemed a shame just to just have a walk. You know, we like to think that it's the walking fest. Our walking festivals is more than just a walk. You will come away learning a little bit more about Murray.
And it's also got the name outdoor in there as well. Is that because of those extra activities that you do?
Yeah, because in the past we've had things like World Swimming to Loch and Dorb. We've had a surfing event where one of our participants actually came very close to a dolphin. So sometimes people come to us and say, oh, can we run this event? And as long as it's connected to the outdoors, we think, why not? If it gets somebody inspired to be outside just to get that fresh air and experience Murray as we love it, then why not?
Yeah, absolutely. Are you able to keep records of how many people show up and where they're from?
Yeah, for sure. We generally have each event has about 12 people. We like to keep it reasonably small so everybody feels like, you know, they're part of the event. Before COVID, the festival was growing very large and we would have about 60 events over 10 days and we would, so roughly about 600, 650 people. But we now are much a wee bit smaller and we have about 35 events and about 400 people attending. We have a growing interest of people coming from England, but the majority are from Scotland within maybe a 50-mile radius. And we always have a sprinkle of people from Europe and further afield. We've had people from South Africa, America, Mexico. It's always interesting how people find out about us. They've maybe come over here to visit family and then they find out about the festival, or they've come from other walking festivals in Scotland and are doing like a bit of a tour.
Looking through our listings on all of the different walking festivals around the UK and Europe, a lot of them, I think the most seem to be in May. Yours is a little bit later than that and schools are starting to break up in some places.
I believe it was first set up in June over midsummer because up here our schools are still on holiday. And so the tour, it was just trying to extend the shoulder of the tourism industry a wee bit to get people who are maybe don't have kids, so are maybe aimed at the retired group. So the reason we extended it from a 3-day to a 10-day festival, so there's 2 weekends. So if people do have kids who are still in school, then they can appreciate the festival on those weekends. But yeah, there has been a few people from abroad which have definitely, yeah, from brought their kids along as well.
Do any of the individual walks have themes? Like, are there history walks? And
Yeah, we have a number of day walks which are into the Glenlivet Hills, which look at heritage but also wildlife, so eagles, or short-haired owls, deer. We have heritage walks on the coast looking at picks, and we even have a wee ones walk around midsummer telling stories of the fairies of midsummer and dragons up a hill in forest. So yeah, there's different walks. I would say kind of split into three groups. There's heritage and history walks, there's nature-based walks which include foraging but also wild tracking animals, and then we have a few the other categories kind of looking more unusual things. So we have lino cutting art class, because in the evening they're going on a midsummer's walk to a fairy-like place, so the lino cutting is kind of creating pictures thinking about the evening event. So yeah, lots of different varieties of things.
Right, I was going to ask if you utilise the fact that it's so light here in the summer.
Yeah, so there's a number of evening events, which I suppose in other places you can't do. So there's one in which the Dornell Estate Ranger runs to a place called Blackwater, and it starts about 5 or 6 o'clock, but it ends around about 9:30. So people are able to finish work and go and have a good walk in the evening as well. And the walk actually has an incredible landscape, and it goes up to an old estate house where they used to stay before they went off and do shooting in the estates. But now it's disabandoned and it's incredibly interesting to look inside this old building.
Do you change them up every year so that it's different?
Yes, I would say 50% of the walks will run every year because they're so popular, and then we try and change up the other events. So it's really what our walk providers bring to us and what they're interested in. And so they might have been researching something new or different, so they've come with a new idea. But some walks are just so popular that they just run and run and run, and they're always sold out.
What are some of the really popular ones?
The coastal foraging one that was sold out last year and it's already sold out this year. I suppose it's really different and people are learning more and more about seaweed and what you can eat when you're coastal foraging. So that's sold out. We have a couple of the walks which are into the Cromdale Mountains, which are kind of based on heritage, but also nature with our rangers. So other ones that are already sold out, we have a museum, Elgin Museum, which always run a number of events. And so one's looking at fossil dunes and trackways, and that's sold out. And their other walk, which looks at the fossils in a forest as well, which is sold out. We've also got a walk, which I don't know if you know when you drove up here, across the Dava Moor, there's a famous stone that's painted white and it always has Jesus Saves on it. And there's a walk from there, which is led by John Halliday, who's a local from the Granton area. And he takes people on a walk from the Jesus Stone right back round to Granton. And his walks are always really popular because the Dava Moor is quite an eerie, dramatic place with a lot of abandoned buildings. And there's lots of stories to tell about the Grants and the battles that took place. So, well, rich in history and wildlife too. So those are the types of walks that sell out quick.
And you mentioned the museum in Elgin. I mean, Elgin's an amazingly beautiful place as well.
Yeah, normally our local historian and writer, Dr. John Barrett, normally has a walk around Elgin, but he's not running one there this year. This year he's going to Aberlour. So there's really ancient graves in Aberlour and quite an interesting place with its whisky heritage. So that's where he's heading this year. And he's also heading to the coast to look at picks as well at Burghead.
All right. I was going to mention the whiskey connection because there's some quite famous whiskies from that area as well.
Yeah, there's definitely a big whiskey trail. In the past, we've had a number of walks that involve whiskey. And I think next year we're looking to work with a local distillery that's just opened up to have a walk and kind of look at the water source, sort of a walk down the water source to the distillery.
You're mentioning that you get some children there. Do you allow dogs as well, or are they?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So each of our events online will have a tick to whether dogs are allowed or not. Obviously, we have to be careful because a lot of our landscape, you know, is farm. And so there might be animals. So we do ask people on each walk, depending on where it is, whether they need to be kept on a lead or not. Some walks, obviously, they're not suitable for dogs, and so unfortunately they can't. But yeah, there's a lot of walks that can.
You mentioned about the fact that a lot of the people that go on the walks are from that kind of 50-mile radius. Do they come in and out and do day trips, or is there accommodation?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So we have a number of people that will do just day trips, but we also have people that regularly visit us. We have the Aberdeenshire ladies, we call them. They come every year and they stay in a different location every time. So often it's like the camping pods where you get. There's a number of good camping places across Moray, but we have a range of accommodation, a few small hotels. There's nothing very big. We do have a Premier Inn in Elgin, but there's lots of B&Bs and lots of different types of camping, so something for all price ranges. But if people are struggling, we ask them just to drop us an email and we will try and advise them where they can go.
And are there costs for the walks?
Yes, we always think that when we've had free events, we find that people will book them, but then they don't turn up, so we do charge. And we also charge because a lot of our walks are run by community groups. So the money that you're paying will go back into that community group. And also a lot of the organisations or enterprises are growing enterprises. So they're using the Walking Festival to kind of kickstart their businesses. So we think it's only right to pay people. So events range from £10 to £25, depending on what the event is and how long it is, or the kind of experience you're getting from it. Somebody who's doing a foraging walk, they have to make sure that they're very careful about what they're getting you to eat and try. So there's a lot of expertise there. So you want to pay for that kind of event, I feel. Saying that, if there is an issue or an access issue due to money, please do contact us and we will try and see what we can do. We're thinking of doing almost like a pass on ticket as well, you know, to help pay for somebody who can't afford it. A lot of the walks have concession tickets for under 18 students or 65 plus as well.
And where do people book these? What's the website?
So the website is murraywalkoutdoorfest.co.uk. But if you just put into your search browser Murray Walking Festival, or it will come up.
What are some of your favourite places in the area to walk?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this. So my favourite walk was one that was held 2 years ago, and it's back again this year because I persuaded them to do it. And this year it's called Hidden Tales and Trails of Glenlivet. And for me, it's wonderfully interesting because it covers coffin stones and lifting stones of the area, which is something which is more known in the West Coast and in the islands. But Murray has them too, and I didn't know this. So, for example, coffin stones were where people would take a body in their coffin from the house to the church. And this could be a good 5 miles or more. And on the way, they would be tired, so they would put the coffin on top of these stones and have a rest. They would also maybe have a wee dram as well, but they would put the coffin there to have a rest. But also, but if they put the coffin on the path or on the land, then the spirit might go into the land and there would be a ghost. So they would want to make sure that the coffin was lifted up from the ground. And also on these routes into town, there was these lifting stones where I suppose you might want to show off to the others that you could lift a big stone. And there's these stones which are on stones or at the side. And the heritage ranger of the Glenlivet has been able to uncover a lot of these. So the walk that you go on with her, she can tell you the tales of these different coffin stones and lifting stones. And it's so interesting. But the landscape there is very dramatic, very beautiful. And with it, quite quickly, you're in an area which is completely away from any town. And yeah, very dramatic and love it.
You don't have to lift any of the stones, do you?
We did try, but we could not.
Well, I could probably handle one about, you know, 6 inches across, but
no, these are like the size of maybe 4 heads, you know, they're big stones. I don't think they've been lifted in many many a year.
I think that's one of the greatest things about that area, though, is you can't, unless you go there, you can't really appreciate the different potential walks that there are there. I think that's one of the greatest things about it.
Yeah, and we're learning things all the time. And, you know, maybe it takes us a couple of years to try and persuade somebody or learn about it to take people on these walks ourselves. So we're never lost for looking for something of interesting to find, for sure.
Yeah.
I suppose the one thing we're lacking on is Munro's, but we do have one. Ben McDewey, a portion of Ben McDewey, Murray's very southerly tip goes into the top of Ben McDewey. So we have organised walks up to the top of Ben McDewey as well. So I suppose that's maybe where we're lacking compared to other festivals.
No, but still, isn't that the one where the big grey man of Ben McDewey is supposed to be?
Yes, years ago in another lifetime, a friend and I created a wee film about the big grey man. Yeah. One of the rangers at Mar Lodge told me that he was up walking himself, and he thought he heard, he was quite tired, and he thought he heard footsteps behind him. And every time he stopped and turned around, the footsteps would stop. And he kept walking, and every time he kept walking, they would reappear, the noise would reappear. And then he realised it was actually his water bottle in his bag. So you can still get quite spooked about these things.
Yeah. Is there anything else that we didn't mention about the festival that you wanted to?
Yeah, a lot of other festivals have a central meeting place where all the walks go from. We don't, because events are run throughout Moray. So if you're in an event where there's no local transport, please do get in touch, as our event providers and our regular participants are so helpful, and there's often an option of car sharing. Last year and this year, we're trying to do some bus options to see if it works. So maybe to the furthest away events to try and see if that helps. But we will always help. A great example is last year we had a cyclist from the Wirral area. He cycled here and he camped on the coast and he attended three events, and we managed to get him transport there and back with the help of our wonderful walking community. So we are a big walking friendly community, the Walking Festival. There's people that do come every year and we'll always try and help as much as we can. So please do get in touch if you've got any questions or need help.
I took my family up to explore the coastline around there, and while the weather wasn't kind, there's just so much to see. Only we couldn't see some of it. Maybe next time. Well, that's it for this week's podcast. Next week, I'm hoping to have some interviews from the outdoor show in Liverpool, unless, of course, there are train issues, which has been known to happen. So I hope you enjoyed this week's WalkingPost.com podcast, and I hope you have a great week, hopefully with a walk somewhere. Cool if it's warm, and somewhere warm if it's cool. Until next time, happy trails! Walking Post from walkingpost.com is an Air Coastal Media Limited production.